both these sciences. And I thought that was a really interesting take. And I don't know, I just feel like there needs to be, something needs to be shaken up and tried and changed in our system.
Adam, got to leave it there, I'm out of time, but thank you, interesting perspective. And it comes back to where we started the conversation. It's not just the children, it's also the whole system and how it's geared up to help them, or in too many cases, not to help them. Are they getting the time they need outside the classroom to run around outside like kids need to do? No. Are they getting the support in the classroom they need? No. Are they being inundated with homework so they don't have the time to be children? In too many cases, yes. So much has got to change in this system. So much. And the government is consulting on it. My goodness, let's hope they get this right. Thank you, Adam, for wrapping up the conversation. Ben Kentish here with you on LBC 5 o'clock the time. Here are the headlines.
Thames Water let down customers and failed to protect the environment.
Thames Water has fined more than £120 million over sewage spills and for breaking dividend rules.
Netanyahu said 2 weeks ago, we think we've got it. We are working to destroy Hamas completely.
Israel's Prime Minister says senior Hamas leader Mohammed Sinwar has been eliminated in a recent airstrike in Gaza.
If even one war goes unpunished, more wars will follow.
Volodymyr Zelensky holds talks with a new German chancellor in Berlin, and...
So it's not softening crime, it's about making sure we build the prisons we need. We've got the bobbies on the beat.
Deputy Prime Minister Angela Rayner rejects a claim today by Britain's most senior police officers that prison reforms will lead to more crime on our streets. Coming up next, does the government have any other choice?
On your radio, on the LBC app, and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation. This is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 5 o'clock, Benjamin Netanyahu has claimed Israel has eliminated senior Hamas leader Mohammed Sinwar. It's believed he was targeted during a strike on a hospital in southern Gaza, in which 28 people were killed earlier this month. The Israeli Prime Minister included his name on a list of the group's leaders who have been killed, but the IDF hasn't confirmed his death. Yotam Confino is a reporter for The Telegraph and is based in Jerusalem.
It just goes to show that sometimes Netanyahu maybe is getting a bit ahead of himself. We also don't have any confirmation from Hamas, which usually takes quite a while. So when you have Netanyahu saying that Sinwar has been killed, but you don't have a confirmation from the IDF or from Hamas, I would take it with a grain of salt. I would also say at the same time, it does look like he was at least targeted and perhaps also killed.
Gaza's health ministry says one person has been killed when forces opened fire on Palestinians at an aid distribution site yesterday. It's not yet known if the death was caused by Israeli forces, but they say they fired warning shots. Detectives investigating a crash in Liverpool on Monday have been given more time to question a 53-year-old man. He's being held on suspicion of attempted murder and drug driving after a car was driven into crowds at the Premier League title parade. Two police officers have been cleared of assault after using a taser and pepper spray on a 92-year-old man who used a wheelchair. Care home staff had called 999 after Donald Burgess grabbed a table knife and threatened to stab them in East Sussex in June 2022. PC Stephen Smith and PC Rachel Komoto will now face a gross misconduct hearing. The Deputy Prime Minister has rejected a claim by the Met Police Commissioner that prison reforms will lead to more crime. Some criminals could be released a third of the way through their jail terms as part of the changes. Sir Mark Rowley says a review of sentencing was published without an assessment on the impact of forces. Angela Rayner insists strict measures are in place to protect the public.
If people are well behaved and deemed not a risk, that they could be tagged and supported in the community. So it's not softening crime, it's about making sure we build the prisons we need. We've got the bobbies on the beat and we're making sure that people are safe in their communities.
And a review into the decision to close Heathrow Airport following a power outage has found bosses made the right call. The airport was shut for almost a whole day back in March following a fire at a nearby substation. In the city, the FTSE 100 has closed down 52 points at 87.26. The pound buys $1.34 and €1.19. LBC weather, heavy rain in the north tonight, lighter in the far south and southeast, turning windy in the southwest, a low of 6. Rain clearing for most tomorrow to leave a windy day with a mixture of sunny spells and showers in the west. Warm in the south with some rain lingering in northern Scotland, highs of 24 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Amelia Cox.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Ben Kentish.
It's 5:04. You are listening to Ben Kentish here on LBC. Great to have you with us if you're just joining us on the programme. Now, around this time last week, the Labour government was making a major announcement that it insisted it really didn't want to have to make. Thousands more prisoners, ministers said, are going to be released early as part of the government's latest desperate bid to free up some space in this country's prisons. Some of those prisoners will have served a mere third of the time that they were supposed to be kept behind bars, and many of them will be violent offenders, those jailed for domestic abuse or crimes like GBH, for example. And yet they will be allowed to walk free long before a judge or a magistrate has decided that they ought to. The government says it simply has no choice, that our prisons are almost entirely full, that without further action, by this November, there would be no more space in them at all. Four new ones are being built. The first of them won't open for at least another 6 years. So what else can the government do? There are murderers and rapists and robbers being sentenced right now and given custodial sentences. And yet, if we don't do something immediately, there won't actually be any prison cells for them to serve those custodial sentences in. We won't have anywhere to lock them away. So it's lose-lose, the way I see it. And yet today, warnings from six of Britain's most senior police chiefs about the consequences of that government decision. They warned today that the plan will put the public at risk of more crime. In a letter urging ministers to help the police deal with this surge of convicted criminals, this flood of ex-cons being released early, they write this. This is six senior police chiefs. On the basis of what we understand at the moment, they say, we are concerned that the proposals could be of net detriment to public safety and certainty to public confidence in policing. Among them, Met Police Commissioner Sir Mark Rowley, who tells LBC today that the decision to release more criminals early will put the police under even more pressure than they already are. So the choice is this: keep those convicts behind bars away from the public where a court has decided they should be, but then have no space left to house the people being jailed right now, or do what the government is doing and let some of those offenders out to free up space, but then run the very real risk of them coming straight back out of prison and committing more crimes. That is the bind the government is in. And the way I see it, they had no other choice but to do what they've done now. But is that the way you see it? With police chiefs warning that this decision will lead to a new wave of crime on the streets of this country, do you still support the Labour government in releasing thousands more prisoners early? 03456060973. It's not ideal, is it? Nobody wants to do it, but I don't see any alternative. If you do, really interested in your thoughts on what it is. What could the government do instead to free up space without releasing these prisoners early? Give me a ring this afternoon, 0345 6060973. You can WhatsApp the same number. Text me if you prefer, 84850, or say, Alexa, send a comment to LBC. We'll speak to a senior police officer in just a moment to get his thoughts on what might be about to unfold. First, though, Fraser Knight is LBC's reporter who has been speaking exclusively to Sir Mark Rowley, the Met Police Commissioner, earlier today about his concerns on this. Fraser.
Well, Ben, look, it's quite rare that you get police chiefs coming out in such strong terms against the government as we've heard today. But what we know is that demands on officers have increased hugely over the past few years. And these police chiefs say that resources simply haven't kept up with that, with more threats from the likes of Russia and Iran, more complex investigations being held. And also the public, well, the public just expecting a lot more of police officers. Now, it's reported that in next month's spending review, the Home Office is set to lose out quite big in terms of what other government departments will get. And that's why Sir Mark Rowley from the Met, alongside other police chiefs, has warned that Labour's own manifesto pledges of having knife crime, of having violence against women and girls, well, they won't be achievable without a significant funding boost.
With all that pressure and the volatility we see in the world around us, like we saw with the riots last summer, it's only with
more money that we can grow the strength of policing that can meet all those proper ambitions of the government. Chancellor's got a difficult balancing act, and we felt this weekend that this was the time to put our case public, say, don't forget policing, we've got big issues to wrestle with in unstable times.
Now, the Met Commissioner spoke to LBC after it also emerged he was one of the signatories on a letter to the Ministry of Justice alongside MI5 and the National Crime Agency. And that was expressing concerns at those sentencing reforms that we heard last week to release more prisoners early. Sir Mark told me that government hasn't told police yet what implications it will have for frontline officers. The word that he used was they've been silent on that. As he said, the changes could be a detriment to public safety. Gavin Stevens is the chair of the National Police Chiefs Council.
There will be implications for policing. There will be more offenders in the community that need control, whether that's through electronic monitoring, us following up on breaches of their conditions and so on, to work with probation colleagues to get them back before the court. So there are definitely implications for policing, and our very early estimates suggest that that could be £300 million or more. But of course, we need to see the modelling that's been done on these policy changes.
Now, the government says it is backing police with an extra £1.2 billion added to their budgets this year, and that more resources are being put into probation to manage offenders in the community. But Minister Chris Bryant has also told LBC that the public purse remains stretched.
These are tough decisions. We, the Chancellor, the Prime Minister, have to make those, bearing in mind what we want to try and achieve over the next few years. We want to make sure that our economy is stronger and engages more people. And in order to do that, of course, you've got to tackle crime as well.
And what I'm hearing, Ben, is that police leaders really want to see a longer term funding deal so that they can plan ahead, not have to worry about what cuts they'll have to make year after year, but also so that they can upgrade their buildings, their IT systems, and invest in new technology. And that's why now they're piling very public pressure onto the Treasury, saying, we need your help if you want us to achieve your goals.
Fraser, thank you very much indeed. Fraser Knight, LBC's reporter. Let's talk about all of that with Ben Julian Harrington, who is Chief Constable of Essex Police. Great to have you with us this afternoon, sir. How big a concern is this latest round of early releases to you? And is it going to spark a new crime wave as we hear today?
We're managing to reduce crime, and that's really tight. You know, our funding settlement's poor, but we've managed to make best use of the money we're given. And, you know, you'll have seen reported how we struggled last year, but with extra government money. You know, I'm in Basildon today in Essex, launching 74 new community officers as part of the neighbourhood policing promise. But as we release more people into the community, as Sir Mark Rowley and colleagues have said, we have to supervise those, working with probation. We have to make sure that those people, where they breach, that we follow up on that, supporting victims, dealing with the crimes they commit and getting them back in front of the courts. So very quickly, the risk is that this extra and this additional work into that the public want to see in neighbourhood policing quickly gets wiped up and used on this. Now, in Essex, we supervise 3,000 offenders in the community. 2,100 are sex offenders. Now, it is right and proper that people rehabilitate, that they're managed on tags and electronically. But when they breach, when they break the law, when they break the rules, it is policing that has to go after them. More of them out there means there'll be more work for us to do. And I need, and policing needs, the funding to continue to do that work on top of all the other things that the government rightly want to do and we want to do.
And am I right in saying, Ben Julian, that the government is asking you effectively to, as you say, with probation, keep an eye on and deal with this wave of early release prisoners without giving you any more resource to do it necessarily?
Well, I don't know how many they're releasing, and we get to see the detail of that, but, you know, that will be interesting. But, of course, if there's more people in the community, there's more to supervise for us.
And you need more money to.
And, you know, and already, you know, to put some scale on this, you know, my funding gap for next year is £20 million. Now, we'll work through that. We make efficiencies. We're putting cops on the front line. We're using police staff and skills. But, of course, when I'm faced with that gap and additional demand and workload, which, you know, officers and staff want to do, they want to do the best job, then government's got to give the funding. So listening to your article, a three-year settlement, making sure that Treasury and government and the Prime Minister is giving policing the money it needs, give us the certainty of that over 2 or 3 years so we can plan, so we can work together and with partners. That's what we're asking, and making sure, because the only way you build safe communities where businesses can thrive, where knife crime is halved, is by having the cops, the officers, the staff to do that work.
But Benjamin, I mean, it seems to me that given the police are so overstretched, given probation is so overstretched already, that if you have hundreds, potentially thousands of people being released from prison who a judge advised should be kept behind bars and yet have only served a third of their sentence, it's almost impossible to see how that doesn't spark a new crime wave.
Well, I mean, we know that people released, not all of them, abide by the rules, and they breach. So, of course, that's going to be extra crime, extra victims.
40% reoffend?
Well, you know, those are victims of crime, and I think we talk about the numbers. We've got to remember every single person. Imagine a victim of domestic abuse who's seen their offender put behind bars, who is released early. And then, importantly, where they breach that, they are not locked up or they're only sent back, and part of the detail is for 28 days to serve perhaps up to a three-year sentence. That can't be right for victims. And importantly, it's more work that policing's got to do. It takes us away from preventing crime, and of course it takes us away from keeping people safe, and it's the money that makes a difference. Any of the gains we've made with police uplift and with neighbourhood policing guarantee, all laudable and things that policing want to do, risks being eroded by this extra demand, which we need to be funded properly to meet.
Understood. Just finally, do you accept the government's argument that they had no alternative but to off on this new wave of early release?
I mean, these are tough and difficult decisions, and I don't underestimate the challenges that are faced. But what government need to do is, if they want safe and secure communities, if they want policing to be able to continue to reduce violence against women and girls like we're doing in Essex, to reduce violence and crime, they've got to give us the money and the capability.
But was it a mistake? Is it a mistake in the first place to be releasing these criminals in the way that they are?
I think we've got to make sure that people are properly released. It's important. You know, we manage offenders in the community all the time, and some rehabilitate and go back and live well. We've got to have the funding to deal with those who can't, and that's not what we've seen, and we need that funding to make sure we can continue to do that amongst all the other things.
Makes a lot of sense. Ben Julian, thank you for talking to us this afternoon. Ben Julian Harrington is Chief Constable of Essex Police. Your calls on this coming in already. Those to come straight after news headlines, 5:16, Amelia Cox.
The Israeli Prime Minister has claimed senior Hamas leader Mohammed Sinwar has been eliminated. Merseyside police have been given more time to question a man after a car was driven into crowds at Liverpool's Premier League title parade. And a 74-year-old former French surgeon who raped hundreds of victims over more than two decades has been jailed for 20 years. LBC weather, heavy rain in the north tonight, lighter in the far south and southeast, turning windy in the southwest, a low of 6 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Dave Chawner. Starting on the M25, heading anti-clockwise, delays of roughly 45 minutes heading into the Dartford Tunnel, and also on the M25 anti-clockwise, queues just before Junction 12, which is the turn-off for the M3. In East London, queues on the A13 eastbound between Prince Regent Lane and the Lodge Avenue flyover. It's a similar story in Wanstead. Slow moving on the A12 eastbound just before the Redbridge roundabout. That's before the North Circular Road. In Camden, the Chalkfarm Road is partially blocked south bound before Heartland Road to Camden Lock Place. That's all because of a lorry that has broken down. And on public transport on the Bakerloo line, there's minor delays due to cancellations.
This is LBC.
At Halfords, we want you to say yes to packing more into summer days with a great value roof box or bike rack. Say yes to freewheeling fun with bikes and gear for all the family. Say yes to a perfectly polished car with our range of car cleaning products. And say yes to easy breezy trips with a free aircon check. Our experts are on hand with checks, advice and fitting. So pop into your local store or shop online and say yes to summer at Halfords. Subject to availability, see halfords.com for full T's and C's.
Call Ben Kentish, 0345 6060 973, LBC.
Looking for a fun-filled day out this spring? The O2 has it all. Catch the latest blockbuster at Cineworld or challenge your friends with interactive football at Toker Social. Take on darts, mini golf and more at Boom Battle Bar. Get active with a game of paddle tennis, climb to new heights or take flight with an indoor skydive at iFly. Feeling hungry? Choose from over 30 bars and restaurants and discover flavours from around the world. Search Do More at the O2 to start planning your perfect day.
The Steakhouse Stack with two layers of delicious beef, crispy onions and peppercorn sauce. It's the kind of McDonald's you take photos of to put pride of place on the mantelpiece. Sure, you'll need to make room, but you remember what your wedding day looked like? The Steakhouse Stack. It's McDonald's and then some. Available until the 17th of June. Serve from 11 a.m. Subject to availability. Participating restaurants only.
You could be a lotto millionaire like Terry. Get your ticket for tonight's draw. The National Lottery. Rules and procedures apply. Players must be 18 or over.
Car owners, You could be owed thousands in compensation. If you bought a car on finance from 2007 onwards, it may have been sold with hidden commissions. My claim group is working hard to help. So, even if you've forgotten your details, make sure you check. Text CLAIM to 86688. My claim group is authorised and regulated by the Financial Conduct Authority. Text CLAIM to 86688.
Claims made simple.
Leading Britain's conversation. This is LBC with Ben Kentish.
519, bit of breaking news for you here on LBC before I come to your calls on policing and justice. Talking of justice and policing, Andrew Tate and his brother Tristan Tate, can tell you, have been charged by police in the UK. Andrew Tate facing 10 charges, including rape, actual bodily harm, human trafficking and controlling prostitution for gain. That in relation to three women. Andrew Tate's brother, Tristan Tate, facing 11 charges relating to one woman, including rape, actual bodily harm and human trafficking. The Crown Prosecution saying in a statement in the last few minutes, a European arrest warrant was issued in England in 2024. And as a result, the Romanian courts ordered the extradition to the UK of Andrew and Tristan Tate. More on that breaking news story as we get it. For now, 5:20 the time. Louise is calling from Brentwood. Louise, to talk, and I'm glad you did, more about whether this government plan to release potentially thousands of prisoners early is something that you can support, even while police leaders warn it might trigger a new wave of crime. Hi, Louise.
Yeah, hi there, Ben. I just think that what's happening is just crazy. Don't do the crime if you can't do the time. And I know they're saying that it's overcrowded, but to me, you know, the criminal's rights and the criminal's ability to be free is being put above the people that are the victims and they've been hurt. Imagine if you've just been assaulted by somebody or raped or hurt by a husband and they're living in that community. Mm. There is no thing saying where they're going to go. Are they going to be housed? Are they going to be homeless? Are they expected to go back to where their partner that they may have previously assaulted lives or in that area? And a lot of the time, criminal gangs hang around together, so they're being released into the environment of which they've come from, which...
But Louise, I hear you completely, and there's exactly my worries about this as well, and everybody's, I think. But what's the alternative? Because you say it's about prisoners' rights being put first. I don't think it is. It's simply a reflection of the fact we've run out of space for them.
No, to me there isn't. I don't care if there's two prisoners in a cell, put four in, put six in.
So just shove them all in the same cell?
Yep, 100%. You just keep increasing. There is space. It's just that it's namby-pamby and it's people's rights. Oh, they've got more rights. What about the rights of the victims? Put them first. Don't just release people.
So what if you got six?
But crime will go up.
You can't just shove six people in a cell that measures 8 foot by 6.
Again, not my problem. I just don't want the monasteries raping people, hurting people,
If they have to sleep standing up because there's no way they can all lie down in their cell.
Yeah, but that's ridiculous. They're not going to be
standing up. It's not. How many people in a cell? If you shove 4, 5, 6 people into a cell that is only big enough for one or two max, they are literally going to be crammed together. They won't be able to even lie down to sleep.
That will deter them from doing the crime in the future, won't it? You know, you get deterred from doing something. You think, oh, I've been in. That was a bit bad. I might not do that behaviour again. That's how you learn. You don't just go, oh, that's okay. I'll just do a few months of my sentence and I'll be let out to just carry on how I like.
So that it's not ideal, but it's a better alternative than letting them walk free, is what you're saying, Louise.
100%.
I don't know how, maybe someone who works in a prison or has been in prison can call in and tell us. I don't think you can just stick 8 people in one cell. But if it's 2 or 3 and they have to lie on the floor at night rather than have a bed and a pillow, a lot of people would say, well, if that's the only way to keep them behind bars when they are violent criminals, I'm all for it. Louise, you won't be alone in that. And to an extent, I agree with you. Thank you for the call. Aziz and Ealing on this. Aziz, the government says it's got no option but to release prisoners who have served just a third of their sentence. Louise says, well, there's an alternative. Stick more of them in the same cell.
I wouldn't go with that, but I'd like to start off by what the police commissioner was speaking about the impact on crime. I think there's another impact as well that I'm not sure if he mentioned it, maybe he did, was about what a potential criminal right now will be thinking. If there's anybody who's into knife crime, stealing phones, robbery, etc., But we're looking at this right now and saying it's never been a better time for me to do what I need to do. Worst case scenario, if I get caught, what happens? You know, they're already overcrowded in prisons. Yeah. And that's a really big point. But as far as, you know, if someone has in for a 10-year stretch, but they've proved to be a model, prison, model person in prison, and they have really turned their life around and their mental mindset around and are really sorry for what they've done, I can see a reason for them being released. But just because we've run out of places...
I can't, Aziz, to be quite honest, because that's not what justice is. Justice isn't you commit an appalling crime, you do a few weeks in prison, you say, oh, I'm really sorry, I didn't mean it, and the justice system says, all right, off you go then. Because victims of those people's crimes, that is not justice.
Well, yeah. I mean, the main point I was going to say was rather than releasing them because we're out of space, why don't we consider offshoring them to other countries?
How would that work? So we say, right, somewhere in, I don't know, Eastern Europe's got space in its prisons, so there's no room for you here in Britain. We're sending you to prison in, I don't know, pick a country, Romania.
Yeah. So we send them to prison in Romania. Say they've got to do a one-year term or a two-year term or something in Romania rather than releasing them. And do you know what? It'll probably be cheaper to put them in a Romanian prison than it would to put them into a UK prison.
Is it legal, do we think?
I don't know. But if we were thinking of doing the same thing with asylum seekers to Rwanda, then why can't we do it to prison guys?
Because they're not
Eastern
British
Europe?
Citizens, I suppose. If there's a British citizens, is it legal to send them halfway across the continent or across the world to do their sentence?
Isn't that what Trump was doing, though, to people in the US, sending them down to...
Right, I don't think Donald Trump's approach to criminal justice and legality is necessarily the one we want to follow.
No, but I'm thinking... Look,
the guy wrongfully deported a bloke to El Salvador and then insisted he'd done nothing wrong.
Yeah, but the thing is, if you look at the world right now, if you look at, say, I'm using an example of the NHS, it is so bad right now in terms of, say, dentistry, etc. A lot of people are going abroad, say, to Turkey to have dental work done. And the same thing with prison services. If it's so bad we don't have the space, what's to stop us to coming up with an agreement with another country to say we're going to offshore our prisoners to you and we'll pay you to do it? And it'll probably work out cheaper than keeping them in the UK and it'll be a win-win for both.
I don't know if it's legal, Aziz, and maybe someone who specialises in that area of law can call in and tell us. But if it is, it sounds like an absolute barnstorming idea to me. But it does make me think when ministers say, look, we have no alternative, we have no option but to release these people early... Louise has just come up with one option and you've just come up with another. So do we say that actually the government has been, it's a bit of a knee-jerk reaction to just let all these people out without fully exploring some of the alternatives that you're talking about?
Well, for the last decade, I think the word competent and government don't seem to go together.
Well, not many of us are going to disagree with that. Aziz, thank you for the call. Again, you have to hope, don't you? You have to assume, I think... that the Home Office and the government and government lawyers have looked at these things, have looked at these possible alternatives and have said, for whatever reason, that won't work, it can't work, it's not legal, it's too expensive, whatever the reason might be. They say there is no alternative but to release criminals early in their droves in order to free up space in prisons. Do you buy that? Or as police chiefs warn that it risks triggering another crime wave in this country, as convicted criminals walk free en masse, is it time for the Labour government to rethink that decision? And if so, what should they do instead? Call me this afternoon, 0345 6060 973, the number. Do you support what the government's doing? Do you buy the idea and the argument they have no other option? Or is there another option that you think is a better one than the one they've come up with? 5:28 the time, Ben Kentish here on LBC. Just before I come back to your calls on that, let's get an LBC business news update with Ben Kumar from Seven Investment Management, who joins us. Very good afternoon to you, Ben. With more on the biggest ever fine that has been issued to regulator Ofwat. Tell us more.
Yeah, so Ofwat, who monitor the water companies, has done about a £124 million fine. But, Ben, the thing is, this is very much... horse, stable door and bolted. This is for, you know, the fact that the wastewater and the sewage treatment hasn't been up to scratch since 2017. This has been a really long investigation. It's been a fine as well for paying out too much in dividends to shareholders rather than reinvesting in the company. And it is a problem when you have a utility like water where your only punishment is to fine them. Because the problem is they haven't been investing enough in all of the infrastructure that we need. And now they're another £120 million quid short because they've got to pay this fine to the Treasury. There is a real issue here when it comes to regulatory powers versus state infrastructure. It's not quite the same as, you know, back in the day with the banks. You know, if a bank goes bust, perhaps you can step in and help out. You know, money is something the government can create quite easily. It can't replace pipes super easily. And Thames Water has £20 billion of debt already, and the existing owners have already walked away. They've said, we're not going to do this. So they ain't going to be paying the fine. So who is? It's the company that's already struggling with water that is already, you know, in a bit of a problematic state that is now going to have to pay out more money. I'm not actually convinced that fining companies that like utilities delivers the right options, especially when the owners, you know, from 2017 onwards have changed hands a couple of times.
Ben, just on who's paying the fine, Ofwat insisting today that that fine won't be passed on to customers through their bills. Does it have a way of making sure that that doesn't happen?
Honestly, I don't believe it does, because here's what I think will happen. Thames Water will be taken over by private equity firms, and I am confident that the private equity firms will be able to employ lawyers and accountants who are incredibly skilled at making sure that if the fine doesn't go directly into bills or something, it certainly won't affect the shareholders. That is the problem with regulation. Unless you are paying regulators or employing regulators who are as smart and interested as the people owning the companies, you don't get the behaviours you want.
Ben, thank you very much. Ben Kumar from Seven Investment Management. Ben Kentish in for Thomas Warbrick here on LBC. Still to come.
We got our visa, we passed all the background checks, and we shouldn't be the ones who are facing such uncertainties.
The Trump administration stops the scheduling of new visa interviews for foreign students hoping to study in the US. But why? Bringing the details on that after the news headlines, 5:30 the time. Here's Amelia Cox.
Andrew Tate has been charged with 10 counts of rape against three women in the UK. In total, the social media influencer and his brother Tristan are facing 20 offences, which include human trafficking and actual bodily harm. Police have been given more time to question a man arrested after a car was driven into people at Liverpool's Premier League title parade. A 53-year-old has been questioned on suspicion of attempted murder, dangerous and drug driving. And Israel's Prime Minister has announced the senior Hamas leader, Mohammed Sinwar, has been eliminated. Benjamin Netanyahu included him on a list of the group's leaders killed in recent airstrikes, but it's not been confirmed by the IDF. LBC weather, heavy rain in the north tonight, lighter in the far south and southeast, turning windy in the southwest, a low of 6 degrees.
LBC, this morning on Nick Ferrari at breakfast.
Is it time to decriminalise the possession of cannabis? Well, a commission that's been set up by the London Mayor, Sadiq Khan, and chaired by a very prominent politician, thinks it probably is. The chair is Charlie, now, of course, Lord Faulkner, who's a KC, and joins me now. How am I going to get it? If it's decriminalised, how will I buy it?
Well, that's the compromise that is made. You have to buy it through criminal sources unless you've got...
how will your recommendations work, Lord Faulkner? Because I can use it for personal use, but the minute I go to someone on Blackheath High Street or Greenwich High Street, I'm breaking the law, am I not?
You're not breaking the law, but the person who's selling it to you is. The current position, Nick, is that so many people get it now so easily that it is extremely unlikely to have an impact on the actual amount that people use.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Back tomorrow morning from 7. Listen on your radio, on Global Player, and the new LBC app.
The Steakhouse Stack, with two layers of delicious beef, crispy onions and peppercorn sauce. It's the kind of McDonald's you take photos of to put pride of place on the mantelpiece. Sure, you'll need to make room, but you remember what your wedding day looked like? The Steakhouse Stack. It's McDonald's, and then some. Available until the 17th of June. Serve from 11 a.m. Subject to availability. Participating restaurants only.
Hillary's mid-season sale just got even better. Get up to 40% off hundreds of made-to-measure styles. Plus, get an extra 10% off absolutely everything. That's 10% off all blinds, curtains and shutters. And an extra 10% off our new range of awnings and pergolas, with measuring and fitting always included. Book your free in-home appointment today. Visit hillarys.co.uk. Hurry, Hillary's extra 10% off everything must end 2nd of June. Conditions apply.
Barclays ready-made investments. The clue's in the name. Not Barclays where do I begin investments. You can start from £50. That's why they're not difficult to get started investments either. And you can choose your risk level. So they're hardly in at the deep end investments. So if you've got savings and you want to help grow your money over 5 years or more, Then search Barclays Ready Made Investments. Make money work for you. Investing is not for everyone. The value of investments can fall as well as rise, and you may get back less than you invest. T's and C's apply.
How do you grow a perfectly sweet strawberry? Well, it takes more than just soil and water, but time, care, and the best conditions to flourish. At Tesco, we keep every strawberry warm during the day and cold during the night to ensure they develop the sweetest flavour. It may seem like a little thing, but to us, it's everything. Now, if you don't mind, the strawberries are sleeping. Tesco. Every little helps.
This is LBC with Ben Kentish. Call 0345 6060 973.
At 4:35 is the time. This comes in from Nadia. Ben, what has happened to our humanity? I think this is in response to Aziz's suggestion that we should send criminals here to serve their prison sentences abroad. Nadia says, we are becoming a very strange country. I'm hearing it more and more. What about the prisoners keeping relationship with their family? The family is not supposed to be punished too, which is a fair point, is it not? If you're your partner, your child, your mum, your dad has been sentenced to prison, hard enough for the relatives and the loved ones already, and that's without that sentence being served halfway across the world. Is that a reason to say, well, actually, no, it's better they are released early than shipped off to another country to serve their time there? 0345 6060 973. We do have to not lose our humanity completely, do we, as we try and find a way through this? Talk more about that in just a moment. 0345 6060 973, the number to join our conversation. Talking about justice and slightly contentious decisions, though, let's talk about Donald Trump announcing today that he has ordered US embassies across the world to stop scheduling appointments for student visas. The reason, pretty controversial. Simon Marks joins us, LBC's Washington correspondent, who is presenting on LBC in for me.
Keeping your seat
from 10 p.m. Doing a very good job of it as well, Simon. They wouldn't want me back. Why has Donald Trump made this decision?
Well, he's waging war on all sorts of institutions, as you know, Ben, in the United States. He's waging war on the judiciary. He's waging war on the legal profession. He's waging war on the press. He's waging war on science and scientists. And now he's focused his fire on universities. He is doing it ostensibly because he says that he believes that a substantial number of the 1.1 million international students that are currently studying in the United States are, as he puts it, radical propagandists. And he believes that radical propagandists, by which he means people who participate in entirely constitutionally protected demonstrations, pro-Palestinian demonstrations, sometimes pro-Israel demonstrations on university campuses in the United States, should not be admitted to the United States because they're a bunch of troublemakers and the US doesn't want them anymore. So this is an absolutely astonishing move that he's taken in the last few hours. It is now May. Obviously, the academic year is going to be kicking off in the United States in late August. Obviously, there are hundreds of thousands of students hoping to come to the United States who need student visas. This would be the time when they would be scheduling their appointments at universities, at embassies and consulates around the world. And they're basically being told, sorry, mate, no appointments available. Don't know when they will be available again. And the message that is going out from the Trump administration to all of these students, including, by the way, 10,000 UK students who are currently undergrads in the United States, is that essentially America's doors are closed to British students, students from all over the world who look at these storied institutions, Harvard, Columbia, Northeastern, UCLA, all of these storied institutions, and have thought about going to try and get an educational qualification there. At this point, I think all of these families are going to have to start thinking again.
And as you say, it's part of a sort of wider war that Donald Trump has launched against certain elite US universities.
Well, Harvard particularly, yeah, is now currently on the receiving end of his ire. He revoked even that university's right to recruit international students. They, of course, are taking legal action against him. We've seen him withdraw federal funding, hundreds of millions of dollars worth of federal funds from universities like Columbia in New York and many others. You know, Harvard has hundreds of billions of dollars in an endowment. So Harvard University is going to survive this.
Yeah.
But universities like Columbia have much smaller endowments. And so those federal funds are hugely important to the academic research projects, particularly particularly in the areas of science and innovation, that has resulted in the United States over many, many years being the country that has delivered more Nobel Prize winners to the world than any other nation. All of this now threatened. And I think what we're seeing here is that this is part of Donald Trump's sort of authoritarian seam. You know, authoritarians around the world often confront institutions that they don't like. MAGA, Donald Trump's Make America Great Again movement, is deeply skeptical of student radicals and the history of the student protest movement in the United States that goes back to the civil rights era in the 1960s. And they don't want it on American soil. That will forever change the character of American universities. And it will result in hundreds of thousands of families internationally having to decide if they really want to send their kids to the US or not.
It fascinates, isn't it, that the administration that thinks that your place at a US university should be contingent on what you have or haven't said on social media has also repeatedly expressed its concern about free speech being under threat in Britain, so much so that it's sending officials here to monitor free speech laws in this country.
None of this makes any sense when
it's
you look at it through the whole prism. They're very concerned about the rollback of freedom of speech in the UK and in other parts of Europe. And yet they're, in the case of Rumeysa Ozturk, the Turkish student at Tufts University, masked agents of the Trump administration hauled her off the streets of Somerville, Massachusetts, because she wrote an op-ed for a student newspaper that they didn't like. Also, the money, you know, for an American president who is so driven by mercantilism, you know, these 1.1 million international students in the US bring the US $44 billion of business every year. They create 378,000 jobs in the higher education sector. So how do you argue that on the one hand, everything's all about the money, everything's all about trade, everything's all about making as much cash as you can, but on the other hand, because someone's written an op-ed in a student newspaper you don't like, you're going to shut them America's doors to international students that bring in $44 billion last year alone. Britain should be getting some of that money,
by absolutely.
The way.
While expressing concern that a woman who proposed that hotels full of asylum seekers are burnt down is somehow a sort of free speech martyr.
Exactly.
Or so on. Yes, mind-boggling. Simon, thank you very much. Simon Marks, LBC's Washington correspondent, who is presenting right here in this very studio from 10 p.m. tonight. You won't want to miss that. 5:41 is the time. Ben Kentish in for Tom Swarbrick here on LBC. Let's come back to our conversation about whether it's time for the Labour government to rethink its decision to release potentially thousands of prisoners early in a bid to free up space in this country's prisons, as police chiefs warn today that it will have an impact on crime and it will have an impact on public safety. Do you buy the government's insistence that it simply had no alternative, there were no other options, or is it time to admit that this could be a catastrophic and actually quite a dangerous mistake? Call me if you've got thoughts on that. Call me if you've got thoughts on what the government might do instead to free up space in this country's prisons. 0345 6060 973. Joe's on the line from Windsor this afternoon. Hello, Joe.
Hi. I thought some of the other ideas that have called in have been a little bit harsh, like sending them to other countries or piling them all up into one cell. But I think maybe serving the rest of their sentence in the army might actually support them.
In the army?
Skills. Yeah. Or in the forces.
Joe, we're talking about people who are in prison in some cases for not being able to control their temper, for being violent. Why would we want to give them guns?
Well, I don't think you'd necessarily have to give them guns. You could decide where in the forces they were working. I think
the army is all about discipline. It's
people.
About respect. It's
exactly.
About abiding by rules and hierarchies. People who are in prison, including for violent crimes, aren't they bottom of the list of people we want serving in our military?
Well, I think that some thought would need to go into who would be relevant for and which areas would work for them. I think they potentially could even, some people might even opt to stay in the army off the back of it.
But what would the benefit be? So someone's just been let out of prison early for, say, they've served a third of their sentence for domestic abuse. Why would we want them in our army? What's the benefit to us? What's the benefit to them?
I think it would teach them self-discipline.
on careers and vocations, why shouldn't the army be a key part of that? Thank you, Joe. Interesting idea. See what people think of that. Ben Kentish in for Thomas Warbrick here on LBC. Still to come.
When it's raining, the water coming from inside. Damp. It smell strong, like the air is not fresh.
The parents of a baby boy who died aged 15 weeks have told LBC they believe the mould in their home contributed to his death. You'll hear the exclusive report next. Let's get the latest news headlines first at 5:45 with Amelia Cox.
Prosecutors have confirmed for the first time they've authorised rape charges against Andrew Tate in the UK. Benjamin Netanyahu claims Israel has eliminated Hamas leader Mohammed Sinwar, and police investigating Monday's crash in Liverpool have been given more time to question a 53-year-old man. LBC weather, heavy rain in the north tonight, lighter in the far south and southeast, turning windy in the southwest, a low of 6 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Dave Chawner. On the M25, heading anti-clockwise, there are delays of roughly 40 minutes heading into the Dartford Tunnel, and sticking with the M25 going anti-clockwise, queues just before junction 12, which is the turn-off for the M3 in Camden. The Chalk Farm Road is partially blocked on the southbound side. That's from Heartland Road to Camden Lock Place. It's all because of a lorry that's broken down. While in Wanstead, it's slow on the A12 eastbound before the Redbridge roundabout. That's just before the North Circular Road. It's a similar story in East London. There are queues on the A13 eastbound between Prince Regent Lane and the Lodge Avenue flyover. And on the trains, Great Western Railway have some cancellations between Paddington and Reading due to overhead line problems.
LBC. At Halfords, we want you to say yes to packing more into summer days with a great value roof box or bike rack. Say yes to freewheeling fun with bikes and gear for all the family. Say yes to a perfectly polished car with our range of car cleaning products. And say yes to easy breezy trips with a free aircon check. Our experts are on hand with checks, advice and fitting. So pop into your local store or shop online and say yes to summer at Halfords. Subject to availability, see halfords.com for full T's and C's.
Call Ben Kentish, 0345 6060 973, LBC.
In the time it takes your nan to tell a story, you could find out if you can claim for a missold PCP agreement. Visit claimsforcars.com, answer a few easy questions, and you'll find out in seconds. If you financed a car between 2007 and 2021 and weren't shown different options or discussed dealer commission, you could have a claim. Claims for Cars is helping people get back thousands on a no-win, no-fee basis. Get the answer in seconds at claimsforcars.com.
Getting ready for summer? It's time to scrub the barbecue, mow the lawn and dust off the wine glasses. At Waitrose, we're getting ready with 25% off six or more bottles of wine or fizz over £6. Like a fruity San Leo Prosecco, perfect with aged Parma ham. Or a crisp Whispering Angel Rosé, ideal for your first barbecue. And our number one Chablis, the aromas of fresh peach pair beautifully with a seafood salad. Start the summer with some great savings at Waitrose. Selected stores online, subject to availability. Exclude Scotland, boxed wines and bottles priced £100 and over.
Discover outlet shopping at the O2 this spring. Save up to 70% off RRP on over 60 designer brands, including Nike, Adidas, Levi's, Kate Spade, The Cosmetics Company Store, Le Creuset, and more. And with over 30 bars and restaurants, a cinema, bowling, climbing, interactive football, mini golf, paddle tennis, and indoor skydiving, why not stay for the day? Visit us at North Greenwich, just 15 minutes from central London. Search outlet shopping at the O2 and plan your trip today.
Tired of watching your uninvested cash do nothing? With the Bank of England base rate reducing, investment platform IG is doing something extraordinary. IG is offering a whopping 8.5% AER variable on all uninvested cash. Yes, 8.5%. Just open an account, transfer money in and make one investment before May 31st to unlock this incredible rate. Visit ig.com now to open an investment account today. Your capital is at risk. GIA, ISA and SIP accounts only. Boosted rate applies until 31st August 2025. Terms and conditions apply.
There's not many things as epic as jumping over a volcano in a monster truck or even swinging over a crocodile-infested river. But 15% off when you spend £15 at Mackey's comes pretty close. Deal drop. Download the app to redeem all week. 18 plus app only. One use per week until the 1st of June. Minimum spend and discount only applies to food and drink. Fees apply to delivery. Participation varies. T's and C's apply.
Find out if you can claim compensation for a missold PCP agreement or a faulty DPF filter. Just visit claimsforcars.com and you'll get the answer in seconds.
Ben Kentish on LBC.
Here's Emma on WhatsApp, and I've been working in the violence against women and girls sector for over a decade. An early prisoner release is a disaster for victims of domestic abuse, sexual violence and stalking. Orders are already not being upheld, and this is a big fat message that crime and violence against women pays. My suggestion would be to empty the women's prisons and put the men in there. Why should a woman serving a sentence for a particular crime be released while a man serving a similar sentence for the same crime is kept behind bars? I don't think that's fair. I don't think that's right, Emma, personally. And this comes in from Anthony in response to Joe's suggestion. These people are broken. The army won't help them. Some of them, Anthony, maybe. I think a lot of criminals would get a lot of benefit out being in the army. But the question is, why should the army and the people already in it be asked to rehabilitate prisoners? It's not their job. It's not on them to solve that problem on behalf of the probation service and the justice system, is it? Jamie's a new caller on this in Tooting. Hi, Jamie.
Hello there.
You're a probation officer.
I am.
Good to have your thoughts on this. What are your thoughts on this? Is it going to be the disaster that Emma's there suggesting it is?
Yes, more than likely it will be. They tried something similar last year in two different release tranches where people were released early in their sentence and the probation service couldn't cope with it then. It's in no better position to cope with them when they come out probably in September time this year under this latest release scheme. So it simply won't be managed the way the government are telling the public it probably will be.
What will the consequence be, Jamie?
The consequence will be that there will not be a reduction in offending, and we're likely going to see an escalation in serious offending and those who are likely to go on and commit very serious further offences.
Because there's a reason they're in prison in the first place, because many of them are a threat to the public.
Partly that. The highest risk prisoners won't be subject to these release conditions. So it's the medium and low risk offenders that will be released under these conditions. However, most very serious offences are subsequently committed by those who are currently assessed as low and medium risk. That's what we know about them already. But if they're not properly supervised and there isn't that support in the community, which there won't be, then they will inevitably escalate in their offending.
That scares me, Jamie, to be quite honest with you. Hear you as a probation officer saying that if this goes ahead, then there will be another wave of serious crime triggered as a result. I mean, is there anything the government could do differently, do you think? Because they say, look, we know it's not ideal, but we've got no alternative.
Honestly, don't really know, because this situation has been created because of how things have been run in the last few years. There was the failed privatisation of the probation service. It's never recovered from that. It currently operates at around 50% of the staffing it needs to do the current workload that it has. So there isn't the people there to do it, and they can't recruit enough people to those posts. Last year they recruited 1,500 new probation officers. In the same period, 1,200 resigned. So they just cannot fill those gaps, and they cannot manage that sentence.
So if they are going to do this, at the very least, and I think you're echoing what the police officers have been saying today, they have to make sure that probation is properly funded to deal with it, and that the police are too.
That's what they've said, and they've promised another 700 and something million pounds to the probation service, which is almost double what the current budget is for it. However, that has to be divided up between all the regions of the probation service that currently operate, and then that has to then be used effectively. But they can't use it effectively because they are a civil service department. When they were small local probation areas, they could locally resource the right support for their offenders in their region. They can't do that now because it's a national service, it's a civil service, and they're subject to Treasury rules and civil service rules.
Jamie, fascinating. Fascinating and frightening insight into what this might lead to. Thank you. Jamie Newcaller there in Tooting. Tom says, I think prisoners should be given jobs as LBC presenters on release. We'll be good for them. Tom, if you want to listen to that, I'll leave that one with you. Right, let's get a look at another really serious story now. The parents of a baby boy who died aged 15 weeks after living in a London flat deemed uninhabitable by an independent survey have told LBC they believe the mould in their home contributed to his death. An inquest for Baby Akram will take place in August. Notting Hill Genesis, the housing association that managed the property, says it's working with the relevant authorities as they conduct their investigations. A warning beforehand, this piece contains audio that listeners might find distressing. LBC reporter Helen Hollinott has the exclusive.
Hello.
A mum trying to distract her baby as he struggles with his breathing. Akram was born on the 8th of November last year, his mum Ayat's third child.
He was a playful, good baby. He was very playful. When he was months old, he started to laugh with me. And even we used to listen to music together. We had a song that we always listened to together.
Home for the Mohammeds, a family of five originally from Sudan, was this one-bed flat in Hampstead. A broken tap runs water, the smell of damp hangs in the air, and there's mould coating the walls and their belongings. An independent survey carried out when Akram was a month old concluded Notting Hill Genesis was failing in its duty to ensure the property was fit for human habitation.
Mould and damp, and behind here is all mould and damp.
For months, Savas Panas from the Pillion Trust, which helps disadvantaged people, worked with Akram's dad, Abdeshafi, to raise the alarm, claiming the conditions were affecting the family's health.
We sent the reports, everything that I could get and everything that Abdeshafi could find for me, we forwarded on to say, we're not playing a game. This is dangerous. This is serious. Please, please, please. Prioritise this family.
Notting Hill Genesis say they carried out a thorough mould wash in September last year. But 3 months later, the survey found mould in every room. In February, Akram's mum took him to the GP with breathing problems, but they were sent home, told he would probably grow out of it. In the early hours of the next morning, he became unresponsive. His parents rushed him to A&E.
They tried to do the CPR, they tried to do lots of things, medical terms that I never heard about. And it was so scary. Eventually they stopped doing what they're doing. And they said, okay, we can't do them anymore because he's dead. Your son is dead. Actually, I didn't believe them. I didn't understand. No, he'll be okay. He'll be okay. Please, can you try again?
Baby Akram died aged 15 weeks. The results of a pathology report shared with LBC by the family's solicitor found he had late-onset Group B strep, which resulted in acute pneumonia. Experts tell us it's not caused by mould, but say poor living conditions can in some cases lower a baby's immune system, making them more susceptible to acute infection. And while full answers from the inquest are pending, Akram's dad tells LBC he believes the condition of their home contributed to his death.
The mould helped to kill my son. And the condition of the house, when it's raining, the water coming from inside. Damp, it smell strong like The air is not fresh.
Akram's family is calling on the government to urgently fully implement Awab's law, which will force social landlords to address issues quickly. It's named after Awab Ishak, a Sudanese two-year-old who died in Rochdale in 2020 from breathing problems caused by extensive mould in his home. In February, the same month Akram was born, the government announced a delay to fully implementing the law until 2027, though the rollout starts in October, when social landlords will be forced to fix dangerous damp and mould in set time periods.
I'm Deborah Garvey and I'm policy manager at Shelter. We are disappointed that it's going to take so long to implement. If there are delays, then that can represent a real danger to the health and safety of tenants.
Notting Hill Genesis say they're deeply saddened by the tragic loss of Akram. They say they're working with the relevant authorities as they conduct their investigations and that no determination has been made by the coroner as to the cause of his death. The government says Akram's case is a devastating tragedy, but that it would be inappropriate to comment further ahead of the inquest.
LBC reporter Helen Hoddenott with that exclusive report. You listen to Ben Kentish here in for Tom Swarbrick on LBC. The headlines at 6 o'clock.
Police are now trying to go through CCTV to determine the movements of the car.
Police are given more time to question a man arrested over the Liverpool Victory Parade collision.
Demand for police services is going up 5% every year. We're up for reform, but we also need more money.
Britain's most senior police officer warns that prison reforms will lead to more crime.
Criminalising people who possess it was a disproportionate and unhelpful thing to do.
London Mayor Sir Sadiq Khan backs a fundamental reset of the laws on the use of cannabis and...
I started when I was 52. Now I'm 64, you know, and the youngest is six.
A couple, both aged 72, win the legal right to parent a surrogate baby, meaning they'll be well into their 80s by the time that child even starts secondary school. Coming up after six, is that acceptable or is it cruel?
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 6 o'clock. You